Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us. Nice Saturday morning. There was a touch, I think, of cool out there in the air this morning. I enjoyed the walk to the car, at least. But it's going to be a warm one. But, you know, knock on wood, still green out there. And some surprise showers this week. At least it was a surprise to me. So things in my garden are still looking green. You know, at the beginning of the week, I remember I walked out of the past my garden and I thought, oh, it's going to be, I'm going to have to water my garden for the first time this year, this week. But then the rain came. And so I still haven't watered my garden. It's awesome. I love that. Anyway, I'm here to talk to you and answer your questions. 512-836-0590 is our telephone number. So let's get rolling. Give me a call. Again, 512-836-0590. And Leslie Uppinghouse from the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center is standing by. Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
Good morning.
it is a good morning.
Your audio volume is very low this morning.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
I don't know why. I don't know why that is. I've never had that problem before.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, nice to visit with you. What's going on at the Wildflower Center this week?
Well, this morning it's going to be wild because it's we're doing dog days today and tomorrow.
Right. Okay.
So we're doing a benefit for some pet organizations.
Great.
And you can bring your dogs to the center. And I actually have my little dog, Kevin, with me. So we're opening up our Linda's Library, and people are already down here. And it's a beautiful morning.
Yeah, it was nice. When I left my house earlier. And so lots of pooches in the garden, huh?
Yeah, and I was surprised to I was just surprised to see how early they were here. So everybody's very excited about it. But it is, you know, in the heat of the day, the very early hours of the center are great because the temperatures are super good.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to your intro, and it is really interesting how I just can't get over the date and where we're at with temperatures and heat.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really, in my mind, the first real week of some high heat, but everything's looking still really, really good.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, yeah. So I referenced, you know, and it's like, I think it was Monday, I stepped out of my car, looked at the garden, I thought, darn, you know, here it is.
Yeah.
I'm finally going to have to start watering things, but then lo and behold, I think it was that night I received an inch of rain.
and you can really. So I mean, it's sort of a sad situation, but I had an issue with my irrigation. I lost my water on one of my green roofs, which has, you know, less than 5 inches of substrate.
Yeah.
And that whole garden went belly up this week.
Oh no.
Which is interesting to see that. Okay, we really are having the high heat, but everything that's in deep ground is doing great.
Yeah.
So it was only in that it was in a very shallow situation. So I think people that have, you know, shallower spaces or pots and containers, you know, really do keep an eye on the water this week, because all this rain kind of fools you into thinking that things are getting well watered, but it really has to do with how deep that soil is.
But that's such a great point. And I think about that this issue of soil depth a lot in this region, because, you know, there's a kind of a garden style that Americans aspire to, which is lush, deep, you know, lots of lawn, turf, etc. But here in Central Texas, for, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who live in the western part of our listening area, they're sitting on top of next to no topsoil. And maybe, you know, the builders of the homes in a lot of these subdivisions brought in some, quote, dirt. But it's likely to be just clay sitting on top of caliche. And it's not a good situation. So, you know, but the landscape aesthetic and style demands that we treat it as if we live in the Pacific Northwest.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's true. It's tricky. You know, and also everyone's doing a lot of vegetables these days, which is great, and doing little, you know, raised beds.
Raised beds are great for
Raised beds are lovely to grow vegetables, but you really do have to keep an eye on when your watering is and that soil temperature doesn't get too hot, wet and hot. That's so tough on vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think, you know, folks that are new to the area, I just, you know, it's tricky. This is going to be the month where they're going to kind of have to watch things. You know, and the other thing, too, is in the gardens right now, everything, not everything, but lots of things, a lot of the salvias and mints and sages and all that wilt in the heat of the sun, you know, late afternoon.
Right.
And that's just normal. I had so many questions yesterday where people were like, what's happening? Everything's wilting. Is everything stressed out? It's like, no, it's 4 o'clock and it's 100 degrees out. And that's just their way of kind of taking a nap. You know, your leaves are going to perk up. So I always say, you know, if you're unsure of when to water, don't have that wilty afternoon be your decision. If it looks wilty in the morning, you know, definitely give it a drink. It needs it. But
that's an excellent.
I think a lot of people panic in the late afternoon when they see stuff wilting and then they water.
Yeah.
Step too much and it gets too wet.
Or they water at the wrong time of day and then in the dead heat, you know.
So like, yeah, exactly.
So that's really good advice. So are there any other events happening this week?
I'm going to be teaching a hedging class about native plants and which ones make great hedges.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to be doing that next week. We have some drawing classes happening. And a huge one. We have the Children's Book Fair. And I believe that's today as well, starting at 1. And that's a big one. We have a lot of local artists, and we have a lot of local writers.
Great.
Come here. You know my dog, Tina's first little furry friends. Everybody doesn't need to hear that meet and greet on the radio.
But we're having
the Children's Book Fair. So that's from 1 to 4, I believe. So it's a whole bunch of writers coming in to show off their children's books.
Austin.
And we have a tremendous amount of writers here.
Austin is a hotbed for the writing community.
Yeah, it's a really great book fair. I think that is today. Double check the calendar, everybody on the website, but I believe that's from 1 to 4 today.
Okay. Well, Leslie, as always, thanks for helping us off to a great start, and thank you for the great work of the Wildflower Center.
Yeah, you and your listeners have a great week.
Okay. Thank you, Leslie.
All right.
Okay.
Take care.
And if you'd like to visit the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower website, it's wildflower.org. We have a caller. I'm going to take the call right now, calling in from South Austin, and that is Ted. Good morning, Ted. How are you doing?
All right. I got some St. Augustine grasses, and I've got patches in it. The grass don't want to grow. I was wondering what I could do about that.
Well, you know, is this a problem you have year to year that just keeps on performing the same way?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if it's like, I guess runners going through it, but it's just missing the grass. It's like 4 or 5 in the front yard.
Okay. Well, sometimes there could be a couple issues here, Ted. Now, let me ask a question about your soil type. Are you on caliche rocky soil, or are you on clay?
Caliche rocky.
Okay. Well, that's part of the problem, you know, and we were just talking about soil depth. You know, what you have isn't really soil. You know, it's just rocky, probably mixed with clay. Certainly less than ideal, and there might be some patches in your yard where, frankly, you know the caliche comes closer to the surface, and it's just really hard for the St. Augustine to you know really root in there. It doesn't have anything to really cling to, and if the healthy runners running through the patch are an indication that this is the case. So what I would do is start an organic regimen of taking care of the turf. And the best thing I think I could recommend to you is putting down a thin layer of compost on top of the turf. Just a quarter of an inch. Spread it evenly, or especially in the areas where you're seeing these patches occur. And just, you know, and then that will act as a fertilizer for the turf. Compost is great for the St. Augustine, but it will also help slowly build a little bit of soil life and health in the areas where you want to impact. So again, a real thin layer, use the back of a hard garden rake to spread it around. You can buy bags if you're just going to treat the patches, or you can buy a small truckload, you know, or a square yard or two, cubic yard, to spread it around for the whole yard, which would be a great thing to do in that kind of situation. Okay?
Okay. All right.
All righty. Okay, thanks for calling in. And, you know, the best times of year to do that would be, I like to recommend a spring, but if you've never done it in the soil, you're seeing these kind of conditions, then you could do it now. But repeat it in September, and then what I would recommend to you is doing it every April and every September for a few years until you, and I think you'll see a big turnaround in the health of that San Augustine. Okay, our number, 512-836-0590. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Tom Spencer here with you. Top of the morning to you. Our telephone number, 512-836-0590. Look forward to visiting with you. I know it's the dog days. I know a lot of you don't even want to think about the outdoors at this time of year with the heat coming on. But you know what? There are things to do, and it's still, if you get out there in the morning and just enjoy, you know, spending 20 minutes just kind of strolling through the garden, listening to the birds, maybe doing a little chore here or there. It's a great way to just kind of feed your soul, feed Mother Earth, just to have a great time in celebrating Central Texas life. So again, whatever your questions are this Saturday morning, I want to visit with you, 512-836-0590. The lines are completely open right now, so go ahead and give me a shout. One thing that I've been working on this past week that is certainly a garden-related is a push right now for the organization I lead, Tree Folks. We are really spreading the news about a scientific study that's come out just in the past couple of weeks that is really kind of mind-blowing. And this is about the power of planting trees to combat climate change. A newly published study shows that if the world really just got serious about planting trees, this is a problem we could solve with that action alone. Now, there are lots of other actions we should be taking. I'm not advocating for just planting trees, but I tell you what. Planting trees, one of the most hopeful things you can do as a human being. Also, if you're a homeowner, it's also one of the things that you can do with your own backyard to not just to combat climate change, but to cool your home, to help clean the air in your neighborhood, to beautify your neighborhood, to provide wildlife with a place to live and be. It's just a great thing to do. So let's get out there and plant some trees. And if you want to join Tree Folks' efforts to plant tens of thousands of trees in Central Texas, in fact, we've planted millions of trees in Central Texas, I ask that you support us. You can find us online. But I tell you what, to get all this, the download on all this new science, go to our Facebook page. Tree Folks has got a great little Facebook page. And you can learn a lot about all these new, all this new information that is genuinely hopeful. And a lot of people think about climate change as being inevitable, and it depresses a lot of, especially young people who think about their own futures. Well, here's some good news, and it's actionable, something we can do in our own backyards, and help also by donating to folks like Tree Folks to make sure that this happens on a scale that will really make a big impact. So anyway. It's a very hopeful thing, and I'm just thrilled to be associated with it. We have a caller calling in right now. It is Dell, who's calling in from Victoria. Good morning, Dell.
Hello, how are you?
Good, good. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fine. It's a little cooler this morning here.
Good for you. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll take it when it comes this time of year, right?
I know. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Anyway, my question is, I have a hibiscus. I've had it for about a year in a pot. It's red.
Mm-hmm.
But I only get one bloom on it. It'll bloom, one bloom, and then that'll die. And then, you know, maybe a week later I'll get another bloom.
Okay. Well,
what's wrong with my hibiscus?
We know hibiscus are heavy feeders. Do you know, is it one of the Chinese form that's frost sensitive? Do you have to protect it during the wintertime?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't protect. Well, I always protect my plants in the winter.
Okay. Well, almost doesn't matter whether it's a native or Chinese. You know, they are heavy feeders. And I have a silver bullet for you, okay? And I'll tell you a little story about this. I have a hibiscus syriacus, which is also called Rose of Sharon. It's a cold, hardy form of hibiscus. I keep it in a pot. Don't mess with it at all during the wintertime. It's a great plant. This year, mine, I was slow to fertilize. And it was just sitting there. And typically at a time when it was covered with beautiful blooms. So I went to the store and I got some Hastergrow fertilizer, which is commonly available. It's an organic fertilizer. And I fed it like in the heat, I water it pretty often, like almost every single day, but because it's in a container. But what I did was I gave it like 3 or 4 doses of fertilizer over the course of a month. And right now, this is just a few weeks ago. Right now, it probably has 100 blooms on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably, I mean, I have fertilized it, but I certainly haven't hyper-fertilized it, you know.
Yeah, so yeah, once every 10 days or so, give it 3 shots. I promise you, you'll see tons of blooms coming on.
All right. Should I plant it in the ground? I mean, it's getting bigger.
You can.
It doesn't have any problem with size. It grows.
Uh-huh.
It just won't bloom.
Well, you know, if you're going to plant it in the ground, what I would recommend is maybe next spring.
Next spring, okay.
Yeah, okay. So they'll need time. If it's a cold, tender one, it'll need time to settle in. So this year, protect it, keep it in the container, and give it the Hastergrow, and I think you'll be in good shape, okay?
Yeah, is it okay to fertilize? I mean, not fertilize, but put, well, I guess it is fertilized. In the heat of summer,
some plants
wait a little bit until it starts getting a little cooler.
It depends on what kind of fertilizer. To give something a little boost for blooming, fine. To try to get something to grow and force growth, wait a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Got to wrap it up.
That's what I always heard. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling in, and we've got a breakaway for news. We'll be right back. Our number 512-836-0590. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Tom Spencer here, 512-836-0590 is our telephone number. Top of the morning to you. Enjoying the show thus far. I hope that you are, too. Look forward to hearing from you. 512-836-0590. We have Pat calling in right now from North Austin. Morning, Pat.
Good morning.
How are things?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I planted I found some nice grass out by my barn that looked like a Bermuda.
Okay.
And so I put it in. I brought some runners and got it started in this little yard of an extra house I have. And that stuff is just the craziest, out-of-control growing grass I've ever seen. So now I want to get rid of it.
A lot of people who plant Bermuda grass feel that way. And I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it is Bermuda. Bermuda is, I think of it as kind of a noxious weed. A lot of people like it because it's a pretty tough turf grass, but it will invade everything.
Runners are huge. Like, they'll grow like a foot a day, seems like.
Yeah, and they will often even they'll grow right over border edgings. Or yes. Under border edgings, they'll grow up through shrubs. They'll send a runner into the shrubbery and can pop out the top even.
Yes.
You know, so it's like, yeah, it's a miserable turf grass if you're a gardener. You know, if all you want is turf, it's one thing. But if you want to actually have something nice in the yard besides turf, you know, forget about it. So, yeah. So the getting rid of it, part this time of year, you have a little bit of a leg up because the heat will help you. Okay, here's my recommendation for attacking something like this.
Okay.
It's not easy, but it doesn't mean spraying a ton of poisons down. And there's a lot of concern right now about herbicides because there's a lot of news about class action lawsuits and cancer associated with some of the famous herbicide products. So, what I recommend first off is buying some 20% vinegar. Okay, this is stuff you can find at local garden shops or ranch supply stores, or just look online even. It's not cheap, and you don't dilute it at all. So you have to buy a few gallons of it for, you know, a large swath.
I've used it.
Okay, good. So, you know, use it. You'd be real careful to use it during the hottest part of the day when the sun is on the plants. Because that's when you really get that scorching burn, is when you have the combination of hot sun on the vinegar, okay?
Okay.
So spray all that Bermuda down, let it cook, and then cover it with black plastic. And keep the plastic down and then this kind of heat, it will happen faster than during a cooler season of the year, but I would recommend at least 3 weeks of cooking the soil by covering it with black plastic. And that combination, of using the vinegar to scorch the plant and hurt it, and then covering it and suffocating it, is a pretty good combination and works well.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, that sounds doable. Like I said, the yard's not very big.
Yeah.
So I should be able to manage that. Okay?
Yeah, and then, you know, finding a good alternative, you know, St. Augustine's a water hog, so there's a major downside to St. Augustine. It requires, you know, rich soils, which we don't have. It requires deep soils, which most of us don't have. And so, you know, people overcompensate by having to water. So that's not a good choice. But Zoysia is somewhat better. And then the native buffalo grass or something like the Habit Turf, which is a blend of native grasses, that's your top choice.
Okay, what was that last variety you said?
It's called Habit Turf. And what it is, you can buy it as a turf or you can buy it as seed. I think it's most readily available by seed. There's also a form of it called Thunder Turf from Native American seed. The Wildflower Center pioneered this work. And this is a blend of three Texas native grasses that work really well together. It has a nice, consistent look. It's super xeric and very attractive. Even unmowed, I think it's super attractive. It doesn't get that tall. And it uses only like 1/5 of the water that San Augustine does.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Well, okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call, and that's an important question for people to consider. And let's keep on moving right now. Again, our number 512-836-0590. We have Tony calling in from Round Rock. Good morning, Tony. Are you with us, Tony?
Tom, is that you? Sorry.
Yes. Yeah, I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I have a butterfly bush. I'm not sure what the name is. It's the one that's like a little bit more, maybe 18 inches ground cover. It used to bloom a lot. I used to get a lot of monarch butterflies, and for the last 2 years, it doesn't bloom, maybe one or two blooms.
Okay, a ground cover butterfly bush.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not a woody plant, and it's just kind of low and kind of leafy and soft, not stemmy, right?
Yes, sir.
Could be a number of different things, but you know, there are a lot of good butterfly pollinating plants out there, or plants that attract, you know, the larvae of the butterfly. So. Let me just ask, is it in a sunny situation or a shady situation?
Okay, it gets morning sun all the way up to maybe 12:30, and then it gets double-type shade.
Okay, that should be plenty fine, and, you know, at this time of year especially. Here's what I would do. There are a couple of ways that you can intervene here and just try to give it a little bit of a boost. Earlier in the program, I was talking about has to grow fertilizer.
Yes.
This would be what I would use in this situation. I love has to grow. It's a gentle organic fertilizer that helps plants spur on bloom, especially. It works extremely well and usually typically very fast. There are two ways that you could apply it in this setting. The first is just to mix it up, and, you know, I use a watering can for my container plants and just, you know, water it in for the root zones of the plants. Or in this case, you might also choose to do it as a foliar feed. And what the process for foliar feeding is using a pump sprayer. If you don't have one, it's one of the great garden tools that everybody should have. You can buy a little 1 gallon one or a 2 gallon one. They're only like $25 or $30. But again, a great product. And it makes your fertilizer spread much faster. Just buying a few bottles of fertilizer would be more expensive than buying one of these pump sprayers. And it makes, like I said, the fertilizer go 10 times as far when you use it this way. So when you foliar feed a plant, you do it in the morning, early in the morning, and you mix it up, the fertilizer up in your pump sprayer, and then you just spray it on the foliage. And it works like a charm. And
I need to give that a try.
Okay.
Can I ask you one more question real
quick? Sure thing.
Okay, so when I walk the parks or go into the park trails, I'm seeing this vine that is covering up the old trees, and it looks horrible. And it's all over Brushy Creek Park, Williamson County Park, Zilker Park, and the trees, the big oak trees, are being destroyed by this vine. And I don't know what's going to happen eventually, but it looks terrible. And I don't know if the city parks are doing anything about it. But
there are a number of invasive species vines that are just your word of horrible is, it could be any one of a number of species. I mean, one of the green belts near where I live, wisteria is out of control, getting up into the trees. And then there's the most tenacious, most evil plant I can think of is a tropical vine that was introduced as an ornamental species decades ago. It's called cat claw vine. And it's just miserable. It's invaded my garden, and there's no getting rid of it once it's established. And
this one grows up the trees, and you can see the vine, taking over.
Yeah, and so there are some ways that you can combat it. In my own garden, I try to aggressively prune it out. And then when I track back a vine growing from the soil, I'll try, when the ground is saturated, I'll try to rip the root zone out. And that they have these little corms or like nut-like thing, growths underground, and that's what you really have to get out. But, because they intergrow with the plants that we desire, you can't really use an herbicidal spray. You don't want to do that.
Right.
But the aggressive pruning is just one way that you can kind of combat that issue, okay?
All right. Well, thank you so much. I need to go get the has to grow stuff.
Okay, very good. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Tom.
All righty. And again, our number 512-836-0590. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Tom Spencer here with you. Our number 512-836-0590. Still got about 6 or 7 minutes here left in the program, so plenty of time to work in a couple calls. Look forward to hearing from you, whatever your garden question might be. 512-836-0590. I mentioned this at the top of the show, and the fact that we are kind of in those dog days of summer, people don't like to think about gardening, but you know what? A lot of folks out there who are longtime Austin gardeners know that, for example, the fall is the best time for vegetable gardening in Texas. A lot of people believe that. And you know what? If you're a fan of things like tomatoes and chilies, now's the time to plant. Believe it or not, even in this heat, the tomatoes need a long time to get to producing their fruit. And we recommend typically early growing, early setting varieties like Early Girl in the fall. And if you want to be successful, plant now. So there you go. And for those of you who just want to refresh your gardens, you can do that. The vegetable gardens working, get them ready for the leafy crops like spinach, lettuce, kale, you name it. And the other fall favorites, things like, excuse me. Cauliflower and broccoli, you can get those going now too. So, or prepare the soil for those now, is what I meant to say. So, you know, keep all that in mind because, you know, there's things to do. We have some callers coming in that right now. That's great. And it looks like Mo is our next caller calling in from the southwest side of town. Good morning, Mo.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We're doing the good here. What's up with you?
I've got a pool with water skimmers the first year, and in like 13 years I had them. How do I get rid of them?
With a pool? I wouldn't try to get rid of them. I honestly don't have a recommendation for you on that. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, you know, pool care, not my thing. And the little water skimmers, perfectly harmless, you know. So.
Yeah, I know they are, but they're annoying.
Okay. Well, you know, there's a pool net.
Yeah, I know. That's how I get them out. I get them out with a pool net, or I brush them onto the side of the pool and I stomp them.
Okay.
That's it.
That's all I know.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
I wish I could have come up with a nice, friendly way of dealing with that issue, but sorry, I can't think of it. Dennis is calling in from Cedar Park. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning.
How are you today? I am good. I am very good. Thank you.
Great. So I have St. Augustine in my yard, obviously, and it's pretty common here in Texas. And my yard looks really good, but I have these large patchy areas that are dying almost like, and I just put sod down, and it's almost like the area is toxic or something in the ground. It's kind of odd. It's been like this for years.
Well, you know, we had a question very similar to this earlier in the show, and I'm glad you called in because I'd like to explore this a little bit further with you. When we hear patchy describing St. Augustine, the first thing that comes to my mind is fungal disease. Typically, that's mostly that is a problem that we find during cooler season, but this is the second time I've heard this morning. And so what I'm thinking is that it could just be the fact that we do have moister soils. We've had generous rain, and people who overwater their turf can be contributing to this problem. So, you know, I've mentioned that I haven't watered my garden all year. We've gotten adequate moisture. St. Augustine, you know, unfortunately, is kind of a water hog. I don't have any. So you need to you need to stay on top of it. But if you're watering on you know, without turning it off when watering system off when we're getting a lot of water, you could be contributing to fungal diseases in the turf.
We definitely have been watering even though we've gotten as much rain as we've had. So maybe that's one of the things we need to stop doing.
Yeah. So here's the thing. When fungal disease is a problem, first off, we typically tell people if they're going to water during the summertime to do it early in the morning. Don't do that if you have fungal leaf disease because the leaves will stay wet for a long period of time. You want to push back the watering until later in the morning when things get a little warmer, which seems antithetical to what our practices are, but you have a disease that you're feeding basically when you water. And then something else you can do, there are some homemade remedies that you can try that are really effective. And again, pump sprayers were called for here. But what I would recommend is in a gallon of water, you can even use 5 heaping tablespoons of baking soda.
Uh-huh.
And a drop or two of pure liquid soap. I like Dr. Bronner's tea tree oil soap because it has an antifungal property. Uh-huh. Agitate that on there and spray it on like every 5 days for at least 3 treatments in the patchy areas and see if that arrests the patch that you see. Okay?
Absolutely. I thank you and I appreciate your advice.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up. But I do want to remind you that coming up next is Gardening Naturally with Jeff. And if you would like to get online, 512-836-0590 is the telephone number. Great organic gardening advice coming your way right after this. As always, I've enjoyed being here, spending time with you on this Saturday morning. I hope that you have a great rest of your weekend. And just enjoy yourselves. Check out Central Texas Gardener at noon and 4. Also check out Tree Folks online and on Facebook. And I'll talk to you again next week. Adios, everybody.